Manjakaputu Vyascha Kripasindhu Vahe Vyascha Velitaram Babinevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. We've just completed hearing Narada Muni or Maitreya Muni retell to Vidura the words of Narada Muni to Prachini Barishad, because Prachini Barishad was involved in fruitive activities, and Maitreya Muni wanted to evoke within his consciousness some renunciation and let him understand that regardless of what situation he was within the material world, there is ultimately death and continued transmigration from body to body to body to body. So he told them the story of Paranjana, how the great king inhabited a body, and his dealings with his wife, and his expanding, his having the city. The city is the body, of course. And with his wife and his expansions of children, and ultimately, after all the activities that he performed, he was dragged from that city of his material body by the force of time. And then, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevaram. According to what Paranjana, or every living entity, is thinking at the time of death, and what does then one attains in his next body? So what determines what we are thinking of at the time of death is the activities and the attachments that we build up in this life. So because Paranjana was thinking of his queen at the time of his death, he took his next birth as a woman, Vidarbhi. And he was the daughter of the princess, the daughter of the king of Vidarbha, and later on she was married to a great devotee king named Malayadwaj. And then at the end of Malayadwaj's life, towards the end of his life when he became old, this king Malayadwaj passed on the kingship to his children, and he went to the forest to practice austerities and mystic yoga, and he became greatly realized. He realized that the super soul was within his heart, and he was right next to the super soul, and the super soul was with him regardless of the body that he was inhabiting. The super soul traveled with him. Krishna traveled with him, reminding him always, or making the attempt to remind him always, to turn the individual soul, to turn to the super soul, to give up his independent plan for enjoyment and turn to the super soul with great devotion. Not become one with the super soul, but with great devotion serve the super soul, giving up one's self-interest. So, then after the death of Malayadwaj, the queen was lamenting, and the super soul appeared, Avigita, the old unknown friend, the unknown one. Because again, the super soul, although we don't know him, he is with us continuously. Matta smrityam gyanam aponam cha. But by his prompting we can remember, and by his prompting we forget. By his prompting, he reminds us of our material plans, our material desires, and pushes us to seek fulfillment of them. This is the super soul. So the super soul came in the form of an old Brahmin and told Vidarbhi, actually, you are not Vidarbhi, and nor were you Paranjana. In your last life, you're a soul. You have forgotten our relationship. We are like two swans, white swans, pure, uncontaminated swans, sitting within the Manasa lake, the lake of the consciousness, of the heart. Now we should, you should take instructions and give up this independentness and turn to go back to Godhead. Turn to the Super Soul. Turn to the Lord to go back to Godhead. So he then described the situation of the living entity, how all the desires are accumulated in the subtle body in this transmigration, birth after birth after birth. So instead of going through that, what we are being requested is to turn to Krishna. And what does that mean? That means to surrender to Krishna. And what does that mean? Manmana bhava mat bhakto. To focus one's mind on Krishna. To somehow or another, become Krishna conscious. To cleanse the heart of all the material desires that we have accumulated for thousands and millions and billions of births, which force us to transmigrate from one body to the next, to the next, to the next, and to the next, and to the next. On forever, practically speaking. So, thus, Narada Muni concludes this story to Pachini Bhajat, saying, this is not only a story told to entertain you, this is an instruction for self-realization spoken by Parokshavad, or indirectly, truth spoken indirectly. So that is the end of chapter 28. Chapter 29 will begin, and 29 is the last of the chapters dealing with the pastime of Prachini Bharishan. And then, it's a long chapter though. It's a long chapter, and if Krishna allows, we'll finish in three or four classes. And then the remaining two chapters of the fourth canto are returning to the sons of Prachini Bharishan, or the Prachetas, who before Narada came to instruct Prachini Bharishan, they had been instructed to go to the to perform austerities to prepare for the ruling the kingdom. So, and there they met Lord Shiva, who chanted a very wonderful song or mantras to them, which they were used to meditate upon the Supreme Lord. So that's getting a little bit ahead. That's in 30 and 31. And here in 29, after hearing this long story of Paranjana, King Prachini Bharishan replied to Narada. Up to this point, he hasn't said very much. He has just listened to the story. So he said to Narada in text 1 of the 29th chapter, "My dear Lord," he calls him Bhagawan, because Narada is greatly fortunate, "my Lord. We could not appreciate completely the purport of your allegorical story." The purport of your allegorical story of King Paranjan. "Actually, those who are perfect in spiritual knowledge can understand, but for us, who are overly attached to fruit of activities, to realize the purpose of your story is very difficult." So he says, very wonderful story, but one problem, I couldn't understand it all. "Great advanced souls will easily be able to understand it, but I was not able to. So Narada replied, "You must understand," he's going to explain to him some of the purports of the story, he's going to explain directly some of the meanings of the allegories. "But we understand the story in one sense more clearly than Prachinibahishat did. Why? Is because we've been reading the purports as we've been going along, and the purports explain the allegorical points. But now Narada Muni is going to explain some of those allegorical points to the king to help him understand. But we won't read all the purports, and we'll read most of the verses, but not all of them, because we've already heard some of these details. But the great sage Narada Muni continued, "You must understand that Paranjana, the living entity, transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies, which may be one-legged, two-legged, three-legged, four-legged, many-legged, or simply legless." What's a one-legged living entity? The snake is a no-legged.
A tree.
A tree, I think, yeah. Probably ichapad. Yeah, ichapad refers to ghosts, excuse me. Ghosts only have one leg. So if you see a ghost with two or three or four or five legs, you know that it's a fake. You're only allowed one leg. Because as Prabhupada explains in the Purport, the ghosts walk only on one leg. I guess that's why you don't hear them as they're walking along. Huh? We'll get to that. Two-legged, two-leggeds, or bipeds, sells of course to human beings. When he is old and invalid, the human being is supposed to be a tripod, a triped, or three-legged, because he walks with the help of a stick or some kind of a cane. Chatuspada, quadruped, or animals. Bahupad refers to those creatures who have more than four legs, such as centipedes, which have too many legs. And finally, centipedes. An aquatic animal, some aquatic animals have octopeds, commonly known as octopi, and without legs, serpents. So, although we all smile a little bit when we hear about these, but the soul is transmigrating. The life force, the person, is transmigrating from one body to the next. How unfortunate if a soul who has the capacity to be with Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan ends up in the body of a centipede or another type of an insect. How unfortunate. What an impedance of his consciousness. So this is what happens. So the living entity, Paranjana, the so-called enjoyer, he transmigrates from one body to the next according to his own work. So now he's going to explain some of the descriptions. The person I have described as avigita, or unknown, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master and eternal friend of the living entity. Since the living entities cannot realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by material names, activities, or qualities, he remains everlastingly unknown to the conditioned soul. We cannot know him through our own power. Non-devotees cannot know him. The ascending method of using our own abilities, our own intelligence, cannot discern him. But yet, although he is unknown to the conditioned soul, he does have specific names and qualities and characteristics. Although, again, the conditioned souls cannot know him. But the devotee, he knows. So he is avigyata from the point of view of the Paranjana, or the transmigrating living entity. When the living entity wants to enjoy, this is text 4, the modes of material nature in their totality, he prefers, out of many bodily forms, to accept that body that has 9 gates, 2 hands, 2 legs. Thus he prefers to become a human being or a demigod. Because the facility offered for enjoyment is greater in the human form. So therefore the living entity prefers these types of body. So the material nature is offering all this facility that one enjoys according to his work. But ultimately, that enjoying spirit doesn't bring enjoyment. It forces us into the cycle of birth and death repeatedly. So there is no enjoyment because it is artificial for the spirit soul to be able to enjoy matter. It is not possible because the spirit soul is composed of spiritual energy and matter is material energy, inferior energy. So Narada Muni continues, text 5. The word pramada mentioned in this regard refers to material intelligence or ignorance. Because material intelligence born of the mode of passion simply makes plans for material enjoyment, makes plans in ignorance and further entangles one in ignorance. It is to be understood as such. Material intelligence means ignorance. It plans based on trying to satisfy the mind, to fulfill the mind's desires, to fulfill the attachments of the mind. That's the function of material intelligence. The mind just accepts and rejects. It decides it wants something. It grabs onto something. We see this all day long if we watch our minds. It grabs onto a concept, I want this, or it becomes repulsed by another concept, by another object. And the job of the intelligence is to act based on that. So when it is attracted to something, the intelligence begins to scheme and plan. And when it is repulsed by something, the material intelligence begins to plan how to avoid this particular thing. In other words, when the intelligence and material... When one takes shelter of this kind of intelligence, he identifies himself with the material body. Influenced by the material consciousness of eye and mind, he begins to enjoy and suffer through his senses. Thus the living entity is entrapped. That is Prabhupada's purport. In material intelligence, in material existence, so-called intelligence is actually ignorance. When intelligence is cleared up, it is called buddhi yoga. In other words, when intelligence is dovetailed with the desires of Krishna, it is called buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita 10.10, Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupayanti te. So when the intelligence is dovetailed with Krishna, it is bhakti. When it is dovetailed with the mind who is desiring the material world, it is ignorance. So the meaning of that verse is, to those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Real intelligence means linking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When this is done, the Supreme Personality of Godhead from within gives one the real intelligence by which one can return home, back to Godhead. Intelligence in the material world is described in this verse as pramada, because in material existence, the living entity falsely claims things to be his. Pramada means illusion. He thinks, I am the monarch, the king of all I survey. This is ignorance. Actually, nothing belongs to him. Even the body and the senses do not belong to him, for they are given to him by the grace of the Lord to satisfy his different propensities through the material energy. Nothing actually belongs to the living entity. nothing actually belongs to the living entity. When you hear that, what do you think? Nothing actually belongs to the living entity. Yeah, what do you think?
Not true.
Not true. Hey. But then you have to answer the question, what belongs to you? What is it? Not even the body. Yeah, that means illusion. So that's pramada. Makes us think that these things belong to us. Even the body and the senses do not belong to him, for they are given to him by the grace of the Lord to satisfy his different propensities through the material energy. Actually, nothing actually belongs to the living entity. But he becomes mad after everything. Nothing belongs, but he becomes mad after everything, claiming, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, janasimo. This is called illusion, madness. Nothing belongs to the living entity, but he claims everything belongs to him. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that this false intelligence be purified, Chaito Dharpanamajanam, by chanting. When the mirror of intelligence is polished, the real activities of the living entity begin. This means that when a person comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, his real intelligence acts. At that time, he knows that everything belongs to Krishna and nothing belongs to him. But actually, when a person polishes or cleanses his heart and removes the ignorance of thinking so many material things that are not ours, are ours, when he cleanses those misconceptions, what he sees is that Krishna is his. And he is Krishna's. So, before one can have Krishna his being belonging to ourselves, or have that type of real consciousness, we have to break all the false attachments, and they are, it is like a death. So very, very painful finding out how nothing belongs to us in this world. And what happens when we find out that something we thought, like say if you have something that you cherish very dearly, think of the possession that you cherish most dearly. Or think of one that you had and then it was stolen or lost like that. Yes? Can you think of anything like that? What?
Money.
Money, yeah. Very painful. What did you lose?
Kitten.
Your kitten.
A big cat ate it.
Oh. Appalling. A big cat ate him? Her?
I wasn't meant to leave that side of
the body. Okay, never mind. We'll get into the details of it. But yeah. So it's so painful. Each one of those things. So painful. So what a situation we are setting ourselves up for in the material world by building up these material attachments. Just simply pain. And it springs from thinking that things that are not ours are ours. And why do we think things that are not ours in the material world as ours? What is the spirit behind that illusion?
I want to enjoy.
So that spirit has to be cleansed and painful very often. So So when a person comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, his real intelligence acts. At that time he knows that everything belongs to Krishna, nothing belongs to him. As long as one thinks that everything belongs to him, he is in material consciousness. And when he knows perfectly that everything belongs to Krishna, he is in Krishna consciousness. So this was Narada explaining the meaning of pramada, or material intelligence, and what happens when one takes shelter of this, the entrapment that occurs to the living entity within the subtle body, within the gross body. The five working senses, this is text 6, and five senses that acquire knowledge are all male friends of Paranjani. This was right in the beginning of the pastime. The living entity is assisted by these senses in acquiring knowledge and engaging in activity. The engagement of the senses, or the objects of the senses, are known as girlfriends. And the serpent, which was described as having five heads, is the life air acting within the five circulatory processes. And all of these for the materialistic person are all directed towards enjoyment. The 11th attendant, this is text 7, who is the commander of the others, is known as the mind. So mind directs, I want, I hate. Sometimes you get confused whether you hate something or you want it or what. This is all simply the mind. He is the leader of the senses, both in the acquisition of knowledge and in the performance of work. The Panchala kingdom is that atmosphere in which the five sense objects are enjoyed. Within that Panchala kingdom is the city of the body, which has 9 gates. Prabhupada's purport. The mind is the center of all activities, and is described here as Brihad Bal, very powerful. To get out of the clutches of Maya, material existence, one has to control his mind. According to training, the mind is the friend and the enemy of the living entity. That means Prabhupada is saying that according to how it is trained, if it is untrained, as this wild acting on its own, it becomes the enemy of the living entity. But if it's trained and attached to Krishna, it becomes the dearest of friends. If one gets a good manager, his estate is very nicely managed. But if the manager is a thief, his estate is spoiled. Similarly, in his material conditioned existence, the living entity gives power of attorney to his mind. As such, he is liable to be misdirected by his mind into enjoying sense objects. Srila Ambarish Maharaj therefore first engaged his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayor. So next, in text 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and there's a description of how the city, the parts of the city, how they correspond to the parts of the body, such as the eyes, the nose, the nostrils, and the different gates and things like that. So there were the eyes, the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, all the gates, the tongue, the hands, the legs, the heart, the mind, intelligence, they're all described, so we'll jump ahead to 18 through 20. Narada Muni continued, "What I referred to as the chariot was in actuality the body. The senses are the horses that pull that chariot. As time passes, year after year, these horses run without obstruction." So we can think of ourselves, when we are young, we are running here and there because pulled by the five horses of what? What are the five horses? The senses. So we are pulled. When our senses are strong, we have so much energy, we go here, we do that, We high jump. We do this, yes? But then they run with that obstruction year after year. But in fact, they make no progress. Pious and impious activities are the two wheels of the chariot. So those are the two kinds of activities that go on. The three modes of material nature are the chariot's flags. The five types of life air constitute the living entity's bondage. And the mind is considered to be the rope, the driving rope, the reins. Intelligence is the chariot driver. The heart is the sitting place in the chariot, and the dualities of life, such as pleasure and pain, are the knotting places. The seven elements are the coverings of the chariot, and the working senses are the five external processes. The 11 senses are the soldiers. Being engrossed in sense enjoyment, the living entity seated on the chariot hankers after fulfillment of his false desires and runs after sense enjoyment. Life after life, but not making any progress, not actually going anywhere. Prabhupada's purport. The entanglement of the living entity in sense enjoyment is very nicely explained in these verses. The word samvatsar, meaning the progress of time, is significant. Day after day, week after week, fortnight after fortnight, month after month, year after year, the living entity becomes entangled in the chariot's progress. The chariot rests on two wheels, which are pious and impious activities. The living entity attains a certain position in life in a particular type of body according to his pious and impious activities, actions. But his transmigration into different bodies should not be taken as progress. Why? Because just going around in circles, just like the merry-go-round, the little child may think he's going up and down, sitting on his horse on the merry-go-round. And he thinks, I'm going so far, but he's only going around in circles. Real progress is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Tattva deham puna janma naiti mam. Janma naiti. One makes real progress when he does not have to take another material body. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Aita Brahmanda Bari Anantu Jivagan Chorasi Laksha Yonite Kariye Brahmana. The living entity is wandering throughout the entire universe and taking birth in different species on different planets. Thus he moves up and down, but that is not real progress. Real progress is getting out of this material world altogether. And towards the end of the purport. In these verses, the word mriga trishnam, padhavati, are very significant because the living entity is influenced by a thirst for sense enjoyment. He is like a deer that goes to the desert to search out water. In a desert, an animal simply searches in vain for water. Of course, there is no water in the desert, and the animal simply sacrifices his life and attempt to find it. Everyone is planning for future happiness, thinking that somehow or another, if he can reach a certain point, he will be happy. In actuality, however, when he comes to that point, he sees that there is no happiness. Have you ever had that experience? Huh? Well, the door is open and you can try again. You want something. You really, really want it. It starts off with a faint desire. And then your mind starts meditating on it. You really want it. And you really, really want it. And then you work and somehow or another you get it. But when we get it, Even though we've thought this thing will make us happy, he sees there is no happiness. I have had that experience. Maybe you haven't, but I have. And every shopper has had that experience. We make long lists, if only I had this. It's just the anticipation is the only happiness we get, practically speaking. He then plans to go further and further. Well, that didn't bring me happiness. But my next plan certainly will. So this is called illusion. This is called mriga trishna, the thirst of the deer. So what happens to the deer when he's thirsting for water and therefore goes out into the desert? He dies. More water, please. Thank you. And its basis is sense enjoyment in this material world. So, in other words, the desert is what? The material world. And we are the deer, transmigrating. Day after day, night after night. What was previously explained as Chandravega, powerful time, is covered by days and nights, namely Gandhavas and Gandhavis. The body's lifespan is gradually reduced by the passing of days and nights, which number 360. What was described as Kalakanya should be understood as old age. No one wants to accept old age. But Yavaneshwar, Yavanaraj, who is death, accepts Jara, old age, as his sister. Days and nights pass. When we heard about Paranjana's final days, the emphasis was on the passing of days and nights and the results of that. So now Prabhupada is going to describe, or rather, not Prabhupada, but Narada Muni is going to describe very bluntly the situation of a man's life like this, because he's preaching so strongly to Paranjana because he wants to wake him up from his illusion. Because what is Prachini Bharisha, what is he doing? Performing sacrifices one after another, thinking by accumulating this piety in the material world, I shall certainly enjoy one pleasure after the next. So here Prabhupada, Narada is preaching very bluntly. The followers of Yavaneshwar and Yamaraj are called the soldiers of death. And they are known as the various types of disturbances that pertain to the body and mind. Prajara represents the two types of fever, extreme heat and extreme cold, typhoid and pneumonia. The living entity lying down within the body is disturbed by many tribulations pertaining to providence, to other living entities, and to his own body and mind. Despite all kinds of tribulations, the living entity, subjected to the necessities of the body, mind, and senses, and suffering from various types of diseases, is carried away by many plans due to his lust to enjoy the world. Although transcendental to this material existence, the living entity, out of ignorance, accepts all these material miseries under the pretext of false egoism, I and mine. In this way, he lives for 100 years within this body. The last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Knowing the basic misery of material existence, one should be induced to get out of the material clutches and return home back to Godhead. So this is, we've heard for so many days and weeks about the miseries of material existence, the promises and the actual results and how they differ, the disparity between the two. And ultimately, what is everyone awarded within the material world? Old age followed by certain death. So what was the point of relating all this to us? It doesn't bring us happiness to hear these things. It brings us sobriety, possibly, but not happiness. But what is the purpose? Prabhupada explains it here in the purport. Knowing the basic miseries of material existence, one should be induced to get out of the material clutches and return home back to Godhead. Actually, the living entity is not at all happy in this material body. Because of the body, he suffers thirst and hunger and is influenced by the mind, by words, by anger, by the belly, by the genitals, by the rectum, and so on. Manifold miseries encircle the transcendental living entity because we're souls, we are not these things. So we're so acting so far below our capacity. Simply, manifold miseries encircle the transcendental living entity, entrap him simply because he desires to satisfy his senses in the material world. So the question comes up, is it worth it? Is the price we pay worth the attempt that we make to enjoy? Are we getting the results that we're actually hoping for? Is the price we pay worth the results we are actually getting? So, if this desire to enjoy the senses in the material world is broken due to this type of strong preaching, as Narada preached to Pratini Bharishad, if he simply withdraws from activities of sense gratification and applies his senses in the service of the Lord, all the problems of material existence will immediately diminish. And with the advancement of Krishna consciousness, he will be freed from all tribulation. And after giving up the body, he will return home back to Godhead. That is what's being suggested indirectly here by talking so much about miseries. The suggestion is that we give up material life and go back home to Krishna. So the full presentation of going back to Krishna, that won't be given until the 10th canto. But all these points are leading us up to understanding that point. What it is like with Krishna, the transcendental ecstasy of being with Krishna. Text 26 through 27. So we live for 100 years. What is the principle of the living entity's existence? The living entity by nature has minute independence to choose his own good or bad fortune. But when he forgets his supreme master, the personality of Godhead, he gives himself up to the modes of material nature. Being influenced by the modes of material nature, he identifies himself with the body. And for the interest of the body, he becomes attached to various activities. Sometimes he is under the influence of the mode of ignorance, sometimes the mode of passion, sometimes the mode of goodness. The living entity thus gets different types of bodies under the modes of material nature. And then what is the result of that? If one has a body influenced by the mode of goodness, the result will be different from one who has a body influenced by the mode of passion or a body influenced by the mode of ignorance. So what is the result? Those who are situated in the mode of goodness, they act piously according to Vedic injunctions. Thus they are elevated to the higher planetary systems where the demigods live. Those who are influenced by the mode of passion engage in various types of productive activities in the planetary systems where human beings live. That activity, constant action, doing. Pushing, being pushed, doing that, doing this. I have to keep moving, I have to keep working, blah, 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 blah. This is passion. Goodness is piety. Passion is better than the third mode, which is ignorance. Because at least with passion, there are results from the work. And with those results, they can be engaged in Krishna's service, which purify everything and everyone. Those influenced by the mode of darkness, ignorance, tama, are subjected to various kinds of misery and live in the animal kingdom. Read a little from Prabhupada's purport. At the present moment, human society is over-influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance. Prabhupada here says passion, but in other places he said ignorance, passion, ignorance. And consequently, people are engaged in working in big factories. Factory, as Prabhupada said, somewhere or another is another name for hell. Yeah, when I was in Melbourne, especially driving back, sometimes we'd leave at 4:30 to get back because there would really be heavy traffic later than that, 4:30. And quite a few times, Geelong is famous for what? And what are the people who are not unemployed? Where do they work? Ford factory. That's what Geelong is based on. Ford. So they work in factories. So on more than one occasion, we'd be coming and stop at the lights when the factories were getting out, and to look at the faces of the people when they were getting out of the factories. You can't say that it looked like they were getting out of hell, because they were carrying hell with them still. Their faces really looked tortured. Very, very, very sad. Factory, isn't it? It's because it kills the human spirit to be there, you know. Move the assembly line, moves on. And they replace the humans with robots, because a machine can do this kind of work. Really, that's what they're doing. So the people, because of their passion, their desire to enjoy, they're engaged in working in big factories. They forget how distressful it is to live in such places. They get used to it. In Bhagavad Gita, such activities are described as ugra karma. That is, distressful activities. Those who utilize the energy of the workers are called capitalists. And those who actually perform the work are called laborers. In actuality, they are both capitalists, and the workers are in the mode of passion and ignorance. The result is that there is always a distressful situation. In contrast to these men, are those influenced by the mode of goodness, the karmis, the gyanis. The karmis meaning those who perform the pious Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, and the gyanis mean those whose hearts are free from material desires and who renounce materialistic activities. The karmis, under the direction of Vedic injunctions, try to elevate themselves to higher planetary systems. The gyanis try to merge into the existence of Brahman, the impersonal feature of the Lord. In this way, all classes of living entities and various species of life are existing within this material world. This explains superior and inferior life forms within the material world, based on the modes of material nature that affect one. So we'll continue hearing this explanation of Narada Muni. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Just doing books in the street today. Great when I was looking at the people. Most of the faces were sad or mean, very mean, I think.
Yeah. Sad people have just run into the mean people. And the mean people are too mean to be sad. So how did you feel when you were distributing books to the sad and the mean? Huh? Well, how did you feel? But you didn't. You might have felt sad, but you probably didn't feel mean. No. Did you feel sorry for people that you were dealing with?
Yeah.
Did you feel you were helping them?
Yeah.
Nice. How did you feel about helping them, and that you were helping them, but they weren't mostly interested?
Yeah. I know that it is happening.
Yeah. What was your experience today with the sad and the mean? What do you mean you end up going with the flow? Which way did you flow? Upward or downward? Somewhere in between. Did the people look sad to you? Huh? Did you run into any mean ones? Yeah. Huh? You don't want to make mean people happy because they get happy by being mean to you. Anyway, any other questions or comments? Yes.
Well, the text 22.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to accept old age, but even as to the even God, who is dead, accepts Jada and his sister.
Yeah. No one wants to marry old age, but everyone is forced to. So Yavanaraj accepted her to work with her as a sister. So death uses old age, the power of old age. I think that's the basic idea. Maybe. Yeah, this was explained in more detail way back then. Yeah. The elder brother. Yes.
You said people are in goodness, passion, wickedness, you know, they're a different place within that. But you can be in the mind of goodness, but you can also have a bit of the mind of ignorance and a bit of the mind of passion.
Yeah, no one is pure.
Higher,
yes.
And the other, otherwise, it would be impossible to be in one set.
Yes.
And you couldn't, that would mean you'd be like robots.
It's like a color wheel that has the mixture of the three primary colors. And there are different gradations depending on how you mix them. So it's usually said that when you mix goodness, passion, ignorance with each other, so you have one portion of goodness, one portion of passion, ignorance. And then you can mix one portion of goodness and then a half a portion of passion and three portions of ignorance. Three half a portions of ignorance. Or in this way, there are 81 different, basically 81 different combinations or gradations of the modes of material nature, because when you mix the three with three, it comes to, there's nine different varieties. And then the 9 times 9 is 81, so there's different shadings. If you imagine it like a color, it starts on like a rainbow, or you've seen those things, where, you know, it starts on one color and then gradually moves to the next and to the next and to the next. So it's like that. And not only that, but as the Bhagavad Gita explains in the 14th chapter, that the modes of material nature that affect us are always moving and fighting for supremacy within us. So sometimes we're feeling good, and then ignorance will come and turn. We get sleepy immediately. We so feel so satisfied it turns into sleep. And then we can't do that, and then we start running around, and then we get into passion. And so it's very confusing. There's no time for stability due to the modes of material nature, because they're always pushing each other and moving each other out of the way, fighting for supremacy. But there's no pure goodness in the material world. There's always some contaminations of passion and ignorance in the material world. Because goodness brings satisfaction, and we become attached to the things that bring us satisfaction. But attachment's in the mode of passion. So goodness turns into passion in that way. And then when we don't lose it, then we become angry, or we become greedy for it, which is ignorance. So goodness turns into passion, turns into ignorance. That's the natural progression.
If someone's eating meat and that's a mode of ignorance,
yes.
they can't notice their ignorance. Like, I realize I had ignorance.
Yeah, ignorance means you're ignorant. It means you don't know, lack of knowledge. And part of that lack of knowledge is lack of self-awareness. One doesn't see oneself. The result of ignorance is deeper ignorance. So people who eat meat, they will often take alcohol to digest the meat. So more ignorance. And then for the pleasure, gambling, etc., etc. When someone goes to a pub and drinks, then they fight, they do this, they cry in their beer, they do all, just sit there and watch the television or fall asleep, stumble out. Ignorance, ignorance, ignorance.
Someone could be like walking past a gambling joint and going, right, I want to go and gamble, but at the same time they might think, I shouldn't mind popping into the area because she's sent them and chanting a few rounds.
So that's the choice of the living entity.
But that's a fluctuation between...
But we shouldn't fluctuate so much, hopefully. So we should cultivate them. It's not that we're just forced around by the modes in that way, but we can cultivate also different modes. And that is done especially by our association. If we associate, and by our eating, by our association, by our drinking, by the places we frequent, and especially the people we deal with, this will influence the modes. So if we eat prasadam, associate with devotees, go to the temple, like that, chant Hare Krishna, then gradually we become more and more in goodness. Yes.
Is there personalities, sin, old age, death, and these other, negative or unwanted qualities, lust, greed, anger, etc. We understand there's a personality behind each of these influences, isn't
there? Is there a person who is lust personified, you're saying? Or ignorance personified? Well, the person who is passion personified is Lord Brahma. Yes? Huh? Yes? And ignorance personified is Lord Shiva. But that doesn't mean they are actually ignorant or passion. But they're carrying that energy. They carry that energy.
We'd see them as working in cooperation with the personnel in charge of a particular yuga, or under working with personification of Kali, or with Durga, or how that whole interaction operates. It's hard to think that perhaps they're pure devotees.
Who? Lord Shiva or Brahma?
These personalities, these negative emotions.
Such as?
Lust, anger, greed, for instance.
But that, I never heard it said there's a person who is...
Like we hear about old age and death, there's a personality.
But these were in an allegorical story.
Because it was King Vaina's father.
Mother.
He was...
married to death. Death's granddaughter or something like that.
Daughter. Death's daughter was his wife.
Yep. But... yep.
It just says Richard. It doesn't clarify whether it's Yamaraj or...
Yep. But as far as I never heard that every bad quality is personified. But I don't know.
Different energies of Krishna, there's a personality we hear, like Sri I just can't think of their names, but each energy, there's a personality. The Vedas personified, and it seems there's a personality behind all of these things.
So, I'm afraid I can't speak much about this topic.
Otherwise, if it's not personalities or directly applying these influences, it's just a combination of the modes.
Or energies, that's the way I usually think of it, as the energy of the modes of material nature. So, or the results of the modes of material nature in combination with an individual.
So when you talk about energy, we have to think about the energetic. So where are these material modes ultimately coming from? Krishna, through the agent of Durga?
Well, the material modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, they have particular personalities behind them. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu. We know that. But then, and Lord Shiva is married to Durga, Devi, but Lord Vishnu is not under. Yes, it's how all the pieces fit together. I can't say that I know. In the beginning it may be, but not really. Could be.
How do we discriminate?
If we have just a specific attachment to a particular service, of course that's very good. But because we're not yet pure, material attachment comes in with that as well, because we're thinking of it as mine rather than it's Krishna's, and I'm a servant of Krishna. So sometimes material attachment gets in there as well. So how to discriminate? We can ask someone else, our spiritual master, and he can tell us what parts are which. But if we continue serving, no matter what, and the lamentation born of ignorance brings great, great grief to the heart, and not spiritual separation, but grief. It's born out of ignorance and misery. And the other will, it brings, increases our love of Krishna. Makes us feel some type of a separation from Krishna. I want to give this to you. So the you, the Krishna, is dominant actually in the consciousness. And when it's material, I am, they've taken this away from me. I am the dominant person in the consciousness, and the other Krishna is, it's really based on Krishna, and the other, and the ignorance material is based on me. And of course, if we have ignorance and material attachments, we won't want to see it in that way, naturally. So therefore it's good to ask a spiritual master or other trusted individuals. Okay? And sometimes it's a mixture. There's a real desire to serve, and this is all I can do for Krishna, so let me do this. So it's tricky sometimes. Okay, let's stop now. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. So next Wednesday, if Krishna allows, we'll continue.